Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, we have bad, we have crazy martinis for conservatives today. And what we said yesterday during the ESPN conversation, that we realized the podcast really isn't always supposed to be about sports. We're going to briefly mention sports here right at the top and then get into the actual political martinis. At least I hope it's brief. In today's Morning Jolt, the addenda, written by Jim, reads as such. Happy NFL Free Agency Day. Right now, I'm just feeling good that the Jets didn't agree to pay Tampa Bay Buccaneers backup quarterback Mike Glennon $14.5 million per year. Sorry, Greg Corumbus. The Chicago Bears just won that lottery. That was the first I had heard about that, so that made me wince in and of itself, because obviously the Bears have quarterback issues and that's not going to solve them. But then I read this from Business Insider. The Chicago Bears made a surprising move in free agency on Thursday, signing 27-year-old quarterback Mike Glennon to a three-year deal worth $43.5 million. In the process, the Bears appeared to have outbid, well, no one in particular. The Jets and the Bills kicked the tires at $8 to $10 million a year, so $14.5 million. The Bears had that all to themselves. They could have got him for about $5 million less, but no. Why would we want to do that? So, Jim, congratulations on the Jets dodging that ridiculous bullet. I wish I didn't have to take it, but I guess I have no choice now.
Yeah, for anyone who's complaining about sports talk in the Three Martini Lunch, which is a political podcast, look, for a Bears fan and a Jets fan, this is the only time of year that's exciting and interesting. Maybe opening day, but by October, they're out of the playoffs. Things are already in a bad situation. So, and look, it's not like we have a lot to talk about in the postseason. So this is when we get there. No, I just want to point out, Greg, as much as I enjoyed taking the shot in the Morning Jolt, and the Bears are one of the few times a Jets fan, one of the few teams a Jets fan can make fun of another team. I now see, according to Ian Rappaport, who reports for NFL Network, I believe, the Bears are still expected to draft a quarterback.
That is correct, yes.
So not only have you spent close to $15 million on a guy who's meh at best, also got a draft in the position because you don't really have the long-term solution. Now, again, you can say, wait, who are the Jets quarterbacks again? And I'm not even going to get into that. I'm just going to observe that, you know, right now some Texans fans are saying, oh, don't do that, man. Don't do that. This doesn't end well when you overpay for the quarterback that, you know, on a very limited resume. But hey, anything going on in politics, Greg?
Yeah. Don't forget we still have Jay Cutler, who we tried to exchange for like a beer and a bag of popcorn and nobody would take him. So going to be a fun year. All right, let's move on to politics. Good martini. Michael Flynn is not National Security Advisor, and that's even better news today. This is courtesy of NBC News. Michael Flynn, who was President Donald Trump's former National Security Advisor until being fired last month, has registered with the Justice Department as a foreign agent for $530,000 worth of lobbying work before Election Day that may have aided the Turkish government. Paperwork filed Tuesday with the Justice Department's Foreign Agent Registration Unit said Flynn and his firm were voluntarily registering for lobbying from August through November that, quote, could be construed to have principally benefited the Republic of Turkey, unquote. It was filed by a lawyer on behalf of the former U.S. Army Lieutenant General and Intelligence Chief. After his firm's work on behalf of a Turkish company was done, Flynn agreed not to lobby for 5 years until after leaving government service and never to represent foreign governments. And it looks like it took him a while to even register this much, Jim. I'm sure he just forgot about it, but I'd love to be able to forget about $530,000 worth of work that I did.
Yeah, I was going to say, look, you know, why is this the good martini? Because you can't ask Michael Flynn to resign twice. He's already gone. Because let's face it, if he was still in this position and word got out that, you know, that during a very short period of time, right, they began the contract in August and it was over by November, $500,000 for a Turkish company, which, oh, by the way, definitely has ties to the Turkish government. And apparently one of the things that was a high priority for that they wanted Flynn to talk about was about this cleric Fethullah Gulen. This is a guy who lives out in Pennsylvania. He's a critic of the Erdogan government. My expertise in Turkish politics is not up to speed. But one of the key lessons was stop looking for good guys. There is nobody who is the pro-American guy you super duper love. But this is a guy who's come and has asylum in Sailorsburg, Pennsylvania. So the Turkeys wanted us to deport him back there. We're very reluctant to it. We kind of feel like he's basically you could argue whether he's a political prisoner or being politically persecuted. But basically, according to the filing, the firm Flynn Intel, the work involved collecting information about Gulen and pressuring U.S. officials to take action against it, including, you know, lobbying Congress. And man, could you imagine if word had gotten out that the current national security advisor had collected $500,000 to effectively lobby for one of the Turkish government's top priorities? Do you think people would be screaming conflict of interest? Do you think people would be, you know, there are a lot of criticisms of Mike Flynn that might not be fair. This strikes me as a really fair criticism. This is, you know, you can't do this and then just jump into the job of national security advisor. I think there's really, I think if you want to retire from U.S. government work, and then jump into lobbying for foreign companies, go right ahead. Turkey actually has hired a bunch of them. I want to say either Gephardt or Tom Daschle took on foreign countries as clients. This is all perfectly legal, but you got to disclose it. And generally, you got to disclose it pretty quickly. So when you just suddenly remember now, oh, by the way, I was working for this this Turkish company, but it totally wasn't the Turkish government, even though it's got ties to the Turkish government. This is a bullet dodged for the Trump administration, that as much as it may have been, you know, the political stress and aggravation and frustration of having Flynn tossed out because of his less than fully honest answers to Mike Pence, this would have been worse. And I think that Flynn is probably going to be looked at very skeptically because of the amount of money he made from working for a foreign entity and the amount of the enormous headache he could have caused Trump by, you know, had this come to light, he'd stayed in the position.
A very big deal. And doing things that benefit Tayyip Erdogan right now is not exactly a good mark on your resume either.
What I find, look, if you want to do the work, if you want to be Abramoff, if you want to be a lobbyist for a foreign government, you can do that. I know people who do this. You file the paperwork and you know, this doesn't say I'm a foreign spy, but it says you are a registered agent of a foreign government, meaning when you meet with the U.S. government, you're not saying, hey, I think this is a good policy because I think it's a good idea. You're saying this, I think this is a good policy because a foreign government is paying me to do this, right? And I think we can look at you a little warily if you do that sort of thing. And you can't, you know, if you do that, I don't necessarily think you can be completely entrusted to have America's best interests at heart. And the fact that Flynn didn't even feel like any of this was worth disclosing, I don't think it speaks very well of Flynn, and the administration is better off without him.
Yeah, I think more and more people are going to come to that conclusion after this story. So let's move on to the bad news, Jim. That's the good news today. This is the bad news. FBI Director James Comey spoke Wednesday at a Boston College University conference on cybersecurity. This is a Politico story. His remarks covered privacy policy issues. Quote, all of us have a reasonable expectation of privacy in our homes, in our cars, and in our devices. But it also means with good reason, in court, government, through law enforcement, can invade our private spaces. Even our memories aren't private. Any of us can be compelled to say what we saw. In appropriate circumstances, a judge can compel any of us to testify in court on those private communications. There is no such thing as absolute privacy in America, Comey said, because, quote, there is no place in America outside of judicial reach. Before he goes on to say he's a big fan of privacy, as I would imagine most people probably are. But, Jim, this, of course, comes the same week that we see the WikiLeaks dump of the CIA methods documents, including how the government is able to use smartphones, smart TVs, probably those Alexa and Google things that you talk to pretty much spy on you all the time if they really want to. So it's probably not a huge surprise, but it's really discouraging.
I guess it's not on the air anymore, but CBS had that show Person of Interest.
Uh-huh.
I prefer the nickname Vigilante Jesus.
Jim Caviezel,
starring
yes.
Jim Caviezel. Yes. But one of them was a tech genius who created this massive computer that had so much data that it could process and basically predict where someone who was going to be involved in a crime. And the catch was they didn't know whether the person was going to be a victim of a crime or the perpetrator of a crime. That was kind of the mystery of the week for the show. And at one of the points, the guy who creates this supercomputer says, yeah, I was working for the intelligence agencies and we were trying to figure out how can we get people to reveal all of their personal information in a way how can we get them to provide it? So I invented social media. And it's kind of a joke, but it is kind of an observation that If somebody had said, the government would like you to carry around a device that can be remotely accessed and can record you surreptitiously without you knowing it, and they'd like to have a GPS tracker in it and for you to carry it around all the time, and not only that, maybe even like you will periodically take pictures with it to show, to put it in a file where they can see what you've seen. People say, I'm not doing that. But people say, hey, would you like to buy a cell phone? And then you do that. And now all of a sudden you are carrying around a GPS tracking. Or even better, as we're having this conversation, Greg, if I could have some sort of device that, you know, tracked how many steps I take in a day, how many calories I burn, all my health information, and just wear it on my wrist and make it remotely accessible over a wireless network that may or may not be secure. Jim, would you do that? No, heck not. The government can't make – oh, it's a Fitbit? Cool. Okay. And I'll try to do that, right? We now are in a world in which technology has given us so many amazing things we can do, but we just kind of assume that it's safe. And, you know, you talk to hackers and people who know this stuff, it's almost impossible to make it 100% unhackable and protected. No matter how good your firewall is, if it's important enough, somebody somewhere out there is going to be smart enough to come up with some hacking algorithm to figure out the way to get through it. I'm thinking about this in terms of a fiction writing project I had. I think about the world of spies and, you know, how nothing really is secure in a world of hackers and the NSA. Greg, do you think the day is going to come? Because I came up with a machine that you can actually type things into, and it is completely impossible to hack. The only flaw is it can only print out one copy at a time because it's called a typewriter. Right? And even that, I figured out a way you can send things from one person to another, and it's completely immune to any electronic hacking. It's called sending mail letters, right? And I kind of wonder if you really want privacy, whether you're going to see this kind of neo-Luddite adoption of very basic technologies that we thought were outdated because of the interest of privacy, because of the fact that at that point somebody would have to physically find your letter and get the letter and open it and read it. Somebody would have to actually break into your office and read what you typed on your typewriter. Then as soon as I said that, well, somebody could steal your typewriter ribbon. Yes, they could technically do that. But even handwriting letters, right? Think about it. There's no keystrokes to track and all that kind of stuff. So I myself, Greg, have always operated on a really ingenious cryptological code system for everything that I communicate. Greg, it's called Really Awful Handwriting. That way, nobody else knows what I wrote, and they can't catch my messages, and that way all my secrets are protected. So, those are my thoughts on how to adopt to this world. I think Comey's right. It is kind of frightening. You know, we think about Orwell. We think about all these kind of visions of the future. What I don't think we ever realize is how much, you know, the Brave New World and 1984 would kind of merge together, that we would voluntarily embrace these technological devices that have the potential to reveal all kinds of stuff we don't want to share with the public. But we do it out of convenience, and now all of a sudden, if a hacker is sufficiently determined, your life can be an open book to them.
You've written about this in The Morning Jolt before, Jim. Remember back in the late 90s when Gene Hackman's character in Enemy of the State seemed so radical and paranoid?
Yes.
I think that's where we're headed.
That's the old-fashioned, right? You know, he had all these. You know, the other thing was also he had Seth Green, all these young hipster Hollywood actors, all of a sudden playing super hackers and things like that. my other also understanding is that every professional hacker or everybody who actually knows something about hacking understands no depiction of hacking in Hollywood has ever been accurate. It always has fancy graphics and VR goggles and don't listen to Hollywood for anything about hacking is my understanding of this. Or maybe it was the one with Chris Hemsworth. It was directed by Tony Scott about Chinese hackers and stuff. But other than that, they're generally pretty bad at this because at its heart, hacking is visually extremely boring. A genuine true movie about hackers would have the audience just a lot of people typing. And lo and behold, Greg, you can't make an action movie about people typing.
All right. On to the crazy martini now, Jim. And if we go all the way back to the 2012 presidential race on the Republican side, there were quite a few candidates on the stage. A couple of them were competent. Most of them were just there taking up space on the stage. But it's also the last time we really heard from one of the candidates who spent most of his time on the very fringe of the stage. One of those times that he was there on the debate stage, he spoke in Mandarin for some reason that just seems completely unknown at this point, although he was the former ambassador to China. Yes, it was former Utah Governor John Huntsman, and he was most famous for this jubilant declaration after the first in the nation primary.
I'd say third place is a ticket to ride, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, a ticket to dropping out before the next primary. But nonetheless, John Huntsman remains in the public eye. He went with that third way, no labels thing for a while. But now he looks to be in good with the new president of the United States. This is also Politico. Former Utah Governor John Huntsman has been offered the job of U.S. ambassador to Russia and is in the process of submitting paperwork to accept the position. Two administration sources have confirmed. Huntsman, who served as ambassador to Singapore under President George H.W. Bush and then to China under President Barack Obama, was an outspoken critic of President Donald Trump during last year's campaign. He was officially offered the Russia post earlier this week and did not respond to a request for comment. Jim, he's obviously got some experience with a pretty significant player on the world stage. A lot of chatter about Russia right now. So what do you make of the Huntsman pick?
I kind of feel like President Trump and John Huntsman deserve each other. Like, it's weird. Like, on the one hand, you'd expect really, should not be significant Senate opposition. I think, Democrats or Trump skeptics would look at this and say, well, this is probably the best we're going to get in terms of a potential Trump ambassador. He has sufficient ambassadorial experience. It's a little bit odd, the guy who's kind of seen as a China and Asia Pacific expert and area of his experience stepping into this. But if you can handle high level negotiations with the Chinese, you can presumably handle high level negotiations with the Russians. Just watch what you eat and be careful of polonium, Mr. Ambassador. The other thing is also considering how much he has been an absolute pain in the tuchus, pretty much the distilled essence of what MSNBC thinks a Republican should be. And not merely saying because his daughter works for the network, just a sense of like, I'm not like those other crazy right-wing Republicans. I'm a reasonable Republican. I will denounce the rest of my party whenever I need to in order to get he was John Kasich before John Kasich was John Kasich.
Right.
And it's worth noting that John Huntsman was John McCain before John McCain was John McCain. All of them have had John Weaver as their chief strategist for their presidential campaigns. I'm instinctively wary of moderates named John who have John Weaver as their advisors, who run as the favorite Republican of the New York Times editorial board or other liberals and stuff like that. But you know what? So like this is like the closest thing we can get to political exile. I mean, I suppose you could say, he'll really mitigate any Trump concessions to Russia. I actually think the Trump-Putin bromance in the works is already starting to hit the rocks. I kind of feel like that at some point Putin is going to snub Trump in some way that, perhaps even inadvertently, and Trump will lash out against Putin. It just seems like it's very hard for the world doesn't have enough room for two alpha males. And at some point, Putin will do something that will make Trump feel like he's not being treated like the alpha, and it'll be on there. So actually, I'm actually just starting to be less worried about that. And by and large, for all of his other flaws, Huntsman seems like enough of a professional to be able to handle anything that comes his way at our embassy in Moscow.
I actually really like this move, not because I think Huntsman will be the greatest ambassador of all time. He might be competent. He might be good. Who knows? But there have been a lot of speculation out in Utah that he was positioning to run for the seat that people assume Orrin Hatch is not going to run for again in 2018 because he's well into his 80s. And he promised last time that he wouldn't run again. And so hopefully that will clear the field for a more conservative senator from Utah. Not exactly sure who that would be at this point. But the fact that it probably won't be John Huntsman, assuming he gets the job, is probably a good thing for conservatives, wouldn't you think?
I think you're right, Greg. The only reason I didn't mention that is that was kind of the Obama administration's thinking when they sent him to Beijing.
Right.
Early 2009. Well, let's send Huntsman to Beijing. He'll see it as a big promotion and a great honor, and that way he won't run against us in 2012. Well, most people that would stop them. Most people would think. In fact, a good example of this. John Huntsman, I can now reveal this, had a small group of conservative journalists over to his house in Washington before he announced his presidential campaign, kind of to say, "Hey, I'm thinking about this," and start talking himself up. He was a very nice man. I just raised my hands, like, "You do understand, though, that you worked for a president that most conservatives see as the devil." I don't know if I use exactly those words, but like conservatives loathe the Obama administration, and you went to work for this president. So how do you bridge that? And he goes, oh, Jim. Yeah, I think most Americans understand that when the president asks you to serve your country, you salute and you say yes, and you do your very best for the national interest, yada, yada. Well, yeah. Governor, I tried to warn you. I don't want to say, see, I told you so, but Governor, I really did tell you so. So the rest is history, and that's where we how things have turned out. But who knows? Maybe, you know, maybe by surely by being a sufficient pain in the tuchus for everybody else in Republican politics, John Huntsman can have the most distinguished diplomatic career of anybody. He's constantly being sent to these far off countries just to get rid of him for a couple of years at a time.
Yes, I'm sure being clueless about politics in his own country will make him extremely shrewd about dealing with our greatest geopolitical foe. That'll be a perfect matchup.
There you go.
Jim, fun day. Until tomorrow. See you then.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.